Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 5 Point Podcast.
Why
We
is
have a
there
spe-
another person here already? Who
Oh,
is
Burke,
this one?
you see, Burke, I've been trying to find another co-host who doesn't interrupt me constantly when I'm trying to introduce the show.
Well, I don't care.
I also don't eat children.
So? They taste delicious.
You're just looking better and better. So, why don't you introduce yourself?
My name is Space Wizard Tom, and I was the requester for this week's episode of Moribito, Guardian of the Spirit, available on Netflix.
Oh, good. It's always great to have a voice to picture on the hate.
How do you picture a voice?
With my mind!
Well, yes, obviously you would be using that, but...
My spleen does my voice picturing for me, thank you very much. Anyway, so we have Space Wizard Tom as a special guest this week.
I'm
Bobcat. Yes, he's Burke. I'm Bobcat.
I'm interrupting.
Yes, you are. Knock, knock. Who's there? Interrupting cow. Anyway.
No.
Here at the 5 Point Podcast, we look at the first 3 episodes of an anime to help you, the viewer, make an informed decision about whether it's worth your time. Usually isn't. But this week may be a pleasant surprise. Spoiler, spoiler. We look at anime based on 5 different characteristics, which first impressions, story, characters, presentation, which is everything that isn't writing related, and then final thoughts. So let's not beat around the bush. Let's get right into first impressions. I'll go first this week. Unlike our other guest stars, Tom here doesn't actually run any sort of other review program. He's just a friend of ours from way back. And so when he recommended this, I was kind of... Tom's interests have a very wide range. Like, he enjoys Phineas and Ferb, but he also likes to read and reread Heart of Darkness.
I do. It's a good book.
So, whereas some of my friends have tastes that have a fairly narrow range, I could sort of predict what kind of show they would recommend. With Tom, I had no idea what to think going into this. I knew that it looked kind of old-school Japanese in the art style, but I went into this one blind.
I suppose that is my cue. My first impressions were I knew Tom had suggested it. I knew Tom fairly well. I tend to set him on fire and zombies. Didn't really know a whole lot about it, or at least I didn't remember a whole lot, because as it turns out, he had actually explained this to me before. He had talked about this show and described something it inspired in him, and when I realized that, I knew it would be at least very decent. But my initial first impressions were, I didn't really have any. I was just really, really hoping it'd be good, because the last few shows we've had haven't been.
Yeah, preach it, brother. So, Tom, think back to however long it was ago that you watched through the whole series.
All the decades ago.
Oh, yeah. I remember, actually, I first got into this show because of the Desu Desu Brigade. I had been watching one of their videos at the time. I can't remember who. I think it was Arcata, I think. And they had a preview of this show. It was their first awards special. That was it. And this show had either been nominated or won the award for best fight scene animation or something to that degree. And I remember watching a clip of this awesome spear fight in a rice field. And from that moment, I was just like, I have to see this show. I'm a big fantasy fan. And so knowing that this was a Japanese fantasy anime, I was just like, oh, yeah, I have to check this out. But I didn't really know much about it beyond that. So when I went in... I basically knew that there was an awesome female spear wielder and that she fought in a rice field. That was the extent of my information.
More than I.
You went down to your local Canadian Blockbuster. You said, I'll take one copy of Spear Fights in a Rice Paddy, please. And they said, get out.
Silly Bobcat, Canada doesn't have Blockbuster. Canada doesn't have anything.
No. First, they offered me sword fights on a volcano, but unfortunately, that wasn't what I was looking for, and the clerk got rather fed up with me. But actually, I remember finding out it was on Netflix, and so I actually first watched through this show when I was basically I was working a gas station job at the time every Sunday, and it started at around like 6 a.m. So I would stay up till like 2. Watching it, and it was the classic anime story of, all right, one more episode. One more.
So as you can tell, Tom hates this anime and chose to inflict it on us for reasons of evil.
Clearly.
So let's move on to point two, the story. Now, I'll remind people that at this point, this is where the spoilers start, but we can only spoil the first three episodes. So, since this is sort of our preliminary gut reaction and take on the show.
One thing I will say right off the bat, this show is a welcome breath of fresh air, because it does way less than the other shows did in one episode, and yet it feels so much better for it. It feels like a lot more happened, despite the fact that not as much happened. It's quality over quantity.
Yeah, the actual series of events isn't going to take too long to go through.
Speaking of which, our story begins with a woman with a spear that she notes is needing repairs, going into a town that is very, very fantasy-based, with a Japanese flair.
I'll admit, actually, that it wasn't until there were two moons in about the second or third episode, that I finally realized that this wasn't a part of Japanese history I wasn't familiar with.
I kind of picked it up from the weapon she was using, the way that people were dressed every now and away, now and again.
See, I'm ignorant enough of Japanese feudal history that I could totally believe that this was just a section of it I was unfamiliar with.
And this is where I make a Baka Gaijin joke, moving on.
See, the moment that I knew that this wasn't actually set in Japan was where someone referred to the emperor of the country as the Mikado, and I went, Gilbert and Sullivan, what? I swear to God, if I see someone with a list, I am leaving.
So...
Morden!
So our spear maiden, Balsa, she does her Three Little Maids from School Are We thing, except she doesn't. Sorry, I just had to throw that in somewhere. She's walking along, and on a nearby bridge, like there are two bridges across this river, and on a bridge off in the distance, there's a royal family's coach, which is being drawn by a Brahma Bull type thing. And all the villagers are cowering, or not cowering, they're bowing respect. She says, not my emperor.
Particularly, they're bowing, it's noted, because there's a superstition in the land whose name I have completely forgotten.
Japan.
Yeah, you're not allowed to look on the members of the royal family if you're a commoner, or you will be struck blind in both eyes.
Yeah. So,
you know, and while this is, in fact, absolutely false, unless their little thing, like, they tell Balsa, oh, you must have a very strong will not to be struck blind. It would be kind of funny if it was actually true.
And suddenly the show turns into a shonen battle anime.
and suddenly the show turns into, she becomes Daredevil with a spear.
Oh, God, no.
That would be awesome.
Have you seen the Daredevil movie?
It wasn't bad. I liked that movie. But that's off topic.
Moving on from terrible taste aside, then an ox is driven into the path of the thing, and it falls into the water as well as the prince, and then the lady goes into the water, but it's not a terrible thing, unlike the
movie. I think we should leave the recaps to Bobcat.
No! Then she puts a spear in a tree and saves him, and then there's a spirit that makes a bubble.
Perk, you're getting it kind of jumbled.
There's a bubble!
Because you're making it sound much faster than it actually was.
There was a bubble!
This show is very methodical. Even the process of her pulling out the wire she's going to use to safely pull herself out, in theory, and using her spear to... I forget whether it was her spear or she just used another knife to set it into something, and diving into the water to go after the young princeling. That takes about a whole minute. But every moment
sure
is great.
I'm sure he won't drown by then.
Well, I guess you got to be careful with yourself. Like, you can't save him if you're drowning yourself. So she dives in, and she gets him. And then I believe they are both hit by the wagon, which has fallen in.
They are almost hit. A bubble appears around them.
Around the prince, more particularly.
Yes.
And she's like, I didn't sign up for a fantasy series. I thought this was historical.
Only in your head. And then she drags them to the land where people begin to surround them, and then she just...
Don't look him in the eyes, you commoner.
She just kind of wanders off. No one really stops her or takes her description.
Yeah, she's just kind of like, well, save the prince. I'm done now. Bye.
Yeah, none of the
I have a spear to get fixed.
She never does, for the record. Spoilers. And we know that no one bothered to remember what she looked like or that she was even a she. Because later on, soldiers come looking for people who have spears. They corner her, drag her there, and demand her to tell them who saved the prince.
Well, actually, I always had a different view of this scene, because the first time I watched it, the way they approach her, she's eating food at like I wanted to say red light district. I'm like, wait, Thomas, hold on, that's not right at all. Red light districts are not the only districts where you can get food. But anyway, let me try this sentence again. She's getting some grub at just sort of a public meal place. It's late at night. It's dinner time. And as she's eating it, she notes a bunch of warriors who are talking to someone on the street. And the person points at her, and they look at her. And she sort of, you know, gets clued in that they're looking for her. So she pays for her meal without finishing it and heads off to the alley. And they corner her in this alleyway. And they basically give her the rundown of, like, we heard that there was a warrior, a spear wielder, who saved the prince earlier today. Do you know anything about that warrior? She's like, no, I don't. And they're like, I guess you should forget what you just heard. And they draw their blades. And initially I was going, this is dumb, guys. Like, why are you attacking her? And I think the purpose of it, they imply, is that they needed to test her in combat to be assured that it was, in fact, this woman. So I think they did have a description of her. They were just verifying in an admittedly still kind of dumb way, I maintain. Well, but
You see, that's what happens when the only witness present who saw her was Miss Swan from Mad TV. So what did she look like? He looking like a man.
I hate you and want to give you a hug. Anyways.
Okay, then.
So she gets brought to the palace after beating up the royal guards.
Because that's how royalty works.
Yes! Goku will be a king of kings. Anyways.
They give her a nice big feast. They give her a place to sleep that's the size of like 20 regular mattresses.
See, the mattress didn't really get me. It was the food that got me. Because there's like four plates. There's like four tables of food in this giant room. And she's the only one there. Like, there's no way she can eat all of this.
Yeah.
This anime is much more grounded in reality than that.
Oh, yes. Thank God for that.
Luffy, she is not.
Still. Actually, I think giving her that amazing room was kind of a jerk thing to do, because before she can even get any kind of rest, the queen comes in and basically gives her a life or death thing of, save my son's life because he's possessed by a demon and his father wants him dead for this fact, because we cannot be disgraced by having a demon-possessed son in our bloodline because we are the children of the gods, or die because I told you about this.
Incidentally, this is the line where she looked the queen right in the eye.
Yeah.
The queen says, you must have a very strong will. Yes, that's it. We didn't make this up.
Thankfully, Balsa just calls her out on her crap, commenting on how she couldn't probably kill her if he tried, or if she tried.
But here's where we learn Balsa's motivation. She'd apparently killed 8 people who were dear to her, and as a result, she's sworn that she would live as a bodyguard and save the lives of 8 people to make up for it. And the little princeling would be number 8.
Which is actually one of the selling points for the show to me when I first encountered this. This is all in the first episode, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is one of the things that really drew me into the show, is immediately when I heard this, I'm like, hold on a moment. We have a reasonably competent female lead who's a spear-wielding warrior of incredible skill and a technical pacifist.
Yep.
Awesome.
I don't necessarily see her as a technical pacifist, but at the very least, she has a code.
The no-killing people code.
Right. So so the episode 1 ends with the queen sets a fire to cover her tracks, and Balsa and the princeling, what's his name again?
Chagum.
Chagum!
Chugga, 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 chugga.
I will kill you.
Woo, woo. Anyway, they get on the chugga train, and they go back to the town.
For the record, we are now in episode 2. The first episode basically ends with her agreeing and them heading out of the palace, it being set on fire to cover their tracks. Doesn't work too well, but oh well.
Episode 2 is much more,
half the episode is two people talking.
Well, yeah, I was going to say...
it actually works.
I was going to say, this episode is...
talking.
Well, I was going to say, the actual summary of events up until, like, the last minute is... It's one of those things where we're not going to go into it too deep just because it's something that needs... that you kind of have to experience. Because here's what happens. We get exposition about the fact that the first emperor had gotten his position by killing a water demon, and they're worried that the water demon, by they I mean the royal astrologers, are worried that that's the demon that has possessed the prince. And they'll need to have his father be the one to kill him, because only his father can wield the magic sword that was used to kill that water demon the first time.
Yeah, it relates to the official Shinyogo. That's the name of the country, yes. Their official history. And they suspect it's the water demon that was slain to bring, you know, to avoid a drought hitting the land. And after the first emperor, the first Mikado, slew the water demon, he became the son of heaven, founded Shinyogo, yada yada yada. So they need they think they need the emperor to kill Prince Shagun. Specifically, so that the water demon dies and history repeats itself effectively. No more terrible drought.
Yeah. We'll see what happens there, but honest...
To make, and one thing that makes the emperor, even though we never see him yet, more human is that the royal astrologer notes that when the emperor realized what he had to do, he was sobbing.
Yes.
So this is no faceless bad guy who doesn't care.
Yeah, all the characters here are characters. None of them are faceless goons. None of them are without some kind of motivation. All of them are people, to some degree. Also, there are a lot of kids that we've glossed over because I want to...
Well, that's kind of the thing about episode 2, is that it's very much a setup episode. You've not just exposition, but you've got introductions of other characters, some development here and there. It's a show that likes to take its time and set things up. And for the most part, it succeeds in this in these three episodes.
Yeah, the second episode is almost entirely talking. In one case, about a good 8 minutes or so is just two people talking, given backstory and whatnot. But it all works. They do it in a way that really makes it work. I feel that some might find it a little bit boring, but for me, it works. It's kind of like Spice and Wolf, only instead of talking about trading secrets...
currency exchange rates.
Currency exchange rates. They're talking about the general history and the plot.
This summer, Michael Bay brings you the dollar declining versus the yuan.
Yes. I love you, Spice and Wolf, even if I haven't watched more of you. Okay, and the third episode is...
battle to the death.
Fighting children and hallucinations.
Yeah, and actually, the third episode is the point where I was really hooked on this show, particularly because of this show has this habit of setting up plot points through like off lines of dialogue that come to be very important later on. In the first episode, she mentions right at the beginning she's coming to get her spear fixed, and it's not really brought up again, aside from, I think, maybe one or two quick images. And then during this fight, her spear, the head of it, the actual blade, which is bound onto the thing, actually comes loose and flies off because she hadn't gotten it repaired.
Yeah, they'd had to rush too much.
Yeah, so it's the nice little touches like that, where you see something pay off like that. This show is particularly fond of doing so.
Yeah, it's really well done.
So the third episode is a really long fight scene. And unlike last week's episode, where the third episode was a really long fight scene and we got bored and frustrated, I was hooked.
Well, actually, it wasn't all that long of a fight scene. It was several different fight scenes stringed together over a series over a period of time.
That's true.
And that's another thing. The show knows how to... Well, we'll get to presentation eventually, but the fight scenes are really fun to watch, but it knows how to weave them into advancement of the story. Like, every fight that occurs is setting up the next fight in such a way that the goals of the participants involved, the fights directly revolve around them trying to achieve those goals. And so if one person would loses a fight, the behavior of all the combatants shifts to accommodate for that. So it's not just one extended fight scene, but it's a very action-packed episode, despite having a bunch of shorter fight scenes, and you kind of can lump it all together as one big one in your head. That's usually a good sign.
Yes.
Oh yeah. And what happens is Balsa has to defend Chugga. I'm saying that wrong, aren't I?
Chagoom.
Chagoom.
Chagoom boom.
Think dative in the Latin. Wait, no, Latin in the date. Never mind, just carry on.
So Chagoom runs off into the forest because ninjas attack him. And Balsa has to fight all four of them off. And she does so pretty well, aside from getting a bad stomach wound.
Which means she doesn't.
Actually has my first favorite moment of the episode, where her spear's head gets off. It basically gets removed. And so realizing that she can't beat this guy without a blade anymore, she moves forward and takes a wound to the stomach that they just mentioned. And then she takes the blunt end of her spear now, and she clocks the guy in the face with it.
I used to be a warrior, then I took a sword to the stomach, then I grabbed a rock and punched him in the face with it.
And no, we're gonna get to that one.
Okay, so Chugum gets grabbed. And basically, she runs off severely hurt. One of the ninjas says, "Okay, you guys take the guy, the commander, who was the one who was knocked out, back. I'll take the prince." And then we get some insight into the prince and this ninja.
Yes.
By the way, they are technically called ninjas, but I'm just going to call them ninja because
they're a super secret brigade with giant bowl hats.
If the two-toed sock and sandal fits, wear it. Anyway, we find out that while this ninja was being trained at the palace, one day he'd gotten beaten up as a punishment for something, and the prince came across him and said, "Oh, were you punished for something?" And you have the guy just cowering, like not daring to look up because, of course, doesn't want to be struck blind. And the emperor and the prince has two candies in his hand, and he puts one on the ground. And for him says, "Here, have this. Don't worry, they gave me two."
Yes.
And this was such an important moment in this ninja's life that he kept the wrapper forever.
Yep, he still has it. Looked at it.
Kept it on him.
Yep, was looking at it while he had the flashback. Then he was planning to kill the child so that the father will not have to suffer through it. And he was planning to kill himself afterwards because, honor and stuff.
Well, he kind of was going against orders by trying to kill the prince himself.
Like I said, honor.
Yeah, he basically had decided at that moment that
honor.
The prince showed me personal compassion. I'm going to. It would be an honor to die for him.
Okay.
We call this the Zuko conundrum.
Honor. Anyway.
Exactly.
Right before he can stab the little kid. Balsa comes out of nowhere and smacks him upside the face again, grabs the kid, tells him how to get out of the place by taking him to a bear mountain. She collapses, though, and has to give him directions.
She says, "Okay, I'm just going to die now, so here are the steps. You go up the mountain, you go through the forest, you tell him Balsa sent you, you'll be fine."
Something
like that.
It's actually, The moment where she bursts out from nowhere has my favorite 1-2 combo of the entire show. And it comes where she hurls her spear like a javelin, again without the head, and the guy blocks it with his sword. So as she's darting forward, she picks up a rock from the beach, and she just clocks him in the head with it while tackling him.
Blunt force.
She has a feat that allows her to use improvised weapons. But the thing about this last scene, the way it ends, is... it's a really tense scene, and it's another thing that I really liked about this show. I've found in a lot of cases that when you get strong female characters, this isn't always the case, But sometimes shows can make the mistake, and this applies for males too, but it's more noticeable for me with female characters because it seems to be a little more excessive, is that when they want to make a strong character, sometimes they will forego personality strong or developed character strong, effectively making them human for just skill at something. And the thing about Balsa is that you do get established very quickly that she is a very, very skilled fighter.
Speaking
but
of,
she...
point number three.
Yes.
Right. We need to get this moving along, but I will say one last thing for the story is that it was almost too good at making me care about Balsa because I stopped caring about the prince trying to escape. I was like, Balsa's dying. She has a stomach wound. I don't care about the prince. Let the wolf eat him.
Yeah, but that's just kind of...
I want to see what happens to her.
It's one of those things I just liked about her. You see her, she doesn't lose the fight, but she's near dying at the end of it. And it's that moment where third episode, and you're already getting a moment like this, and it's set up so well. That's the sign of good writing when it comes to a character, is where you can straddle that line between skilled and not overpowered, and have that character development mixed into it.
Right. And that's Balsa in a nutshell, is she is a very good fighter archetype character.
Honestly, you kind of have her entire character right there.
Yeah, I mean, all that we can add to that is she's also kind of sarcastic. Well, not sarcastic. She doesn't care.
She's 29 years old.
I describe her as matronly, to be honest. She reminds me of a mother who... occasionally you'll find with like a disobedient child and she'll like produce a wooden spoon and smack them upside the head.
I was going to say she's more motherly than not, more like a warrior mother, I guess. Though I don't think she's had any children of her own.
That's actually another kind of point, is that she's got a femininity about her. It's not a traditional one, but there's that matronly air. And that's another right. point in this show's favor.
Right. So moving on, let's talk about the prince. Prince Chugga.
Honestly, I was surprised by him. In the first episode, I thought he was just going to be a very annoying brat.
Same.
Especially with the voice he had in the first episode. I don't know what they did, but it got a whole lot less annoying in the subsequent episodes. But he actually ended up being really, really intelligent, really quick on things. He didn't complain a whole lot. He accepted the situation. He actually grew to care for Balsa. He grew to care for a lot of things. He's a very compassionate character.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was so expecting him just to be the spoiled prince who would have to learn these good traits that he apparently already has.
Yeah, he has them. He just had a brief little moment in the first episode.
I like to describe him as a neutral good with a high intelligence and low wisdom. That's basically what he amounts to. I'm just going to do D&D references for this entire thing. But that's kind of how he is. He's lived in this palace, so there's a moment where Balsa puts her spear behind her sort of in a horizontal manner and tells him to get onto her piggyback so she can carry him. And he looks at her and says, "Explain yourself."
And what the hell is a piggyback?
It's one of my favorite moments just because out of nowhere it's like, well, yeah, why does he not know this? And that's basically it. He doesn't know a lot of common sense things, but he's got a good heart and he is quick on his feet.
And I would say that aside from the ninja character we already covered, while more characters were introduced, you don't necessarily get all that strong a sense of anyone else yet. But there's a strong foundation for later.
Yeah.
There's like a little buck-tooth kid and his sister. There's apparently a love interest, former lover, future lover.
Of sorts
for Balsa, who's just sort of hanging around. He takes in the prince. There's the queen.
Yeah, the two royal astrologers.
You have the queen. You have the king who barely shows up, but all in all, they're not all that... They're worth going into, just not right now.
Yeah.
If this was a complete series retrospective, we'd have much more to say about them.
Yes.
So I guess that goes ahead and brings us to point number four.
This show, the closest animation style I can think of is Avatar The Last Airbender.
Only on steroids.
It's like Nickelodeon said, okay, you know what? Screw the budget. Here's a blank check. Do whatever you like. This show bleeds money and quality on the visuals.
It has really, really good animation.
The one,
honestly, go ahead.
The one nice thing about that is, unlike other shows like Neon Genesis Evangelion, where they kind of lose it all at the end, there's a distinct sense that they're pacing their budget. In episode three, you've got this got a bunch of decent fight scenes, but for the most part, they're willing to be slow and methodical about it, and so you get the sense that it's going to be an enduring quality of animation, not just burst and then where did our money go?
Yeah. This is not the Gonzo Gambit.
Yeah. There's a few little odd moments, mainly when a character is looking directly at you.
Or when they're walking. Like there was one moment like in the first few minutes where she was walking along and the background did not seem to be moving at the right speed. But those are such minor complaints.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I would compare this animation favorably to Kasher and Sins. I'd say that they're about equal in terms of everything except for style. They look like two different shows, but the animation, the fluidity, and everything else just is pretty equal between them, I think.
I would say that this surpasses Kashern.
I wouldn't use that term.
That's just my take on it.
Not use that term.
Well, that's why we're different people. This is kind of my new gold standard for anime.
Yeah, but surpasses, animation. Surpasses to me is like saying, well, it's a poor term. Anyways.
Well, okay. I just like this better because they do better. They don't do the zoom in too close so you can't see the action thing too often.
Well, yes, that's why I mentioned style. Kasherin is an entirely different stylistic show. As far as animation goes, I think they're very comparable.
And I will, though, they love, this show does enjoy its scenery porn a bit, but it works out really well.
Especially its food scenery.
Yeah, one of the great things about the slowness of the show is that it shows off its animation budget, but in a lot of reasonably still images. The opening of the first episode is one of the more breathtaking images in the show.
Yeah, it has amazing visuals, and it has really good music, too.
Oh god, the music for this show is so good.
Background music actually does inspire what it should.
When you get to into later episodes as well, like everything that is set up in these first three, they just sort of build and build and build on it. The soundtrack is fantastic.
For the opening animation sequence with the theme song itself is pretty good. Like not my top 10 all time or anything, but it's really good. But the animation just blew my mind. I'm like, okay, I can see why Tom wanted us to review this.
Yeah. It's really, really, really good. This is quality work.
But I will
you
say,
have to understand, Tom, the last time one of our friends recommended something, it was Misfits.
Yeah, I remember that. The one thing I will say is that the opening song does not give you an idea of what the soundtrack is like. The opening and the rest of the soundtrack are entirely different.
But that brings us to the dubbing, which is, I think, all we saw collectively. And
actually, I watched it on Crunchyroll because I didn't realize it was on Netflix.
Oh.
So I saw it entirely with the sub.
Okay.
Since I don't speak Japanese, I can't speak too much about the acting quality, but nothing struck me as bad, which is all I really ask for a sub.
Well, the dubbing the dubbing was flawed, but okay. It wasn't hit or miss. It was more so hit or humorous.
Yeah.
Some of the characters sounded a little bit odd, and some of the dialogue choices was wooden.
I blame the dialogue more than I do the voices for the most part.
Yeah.
Watching the subtitles, I don't know if the dub was like this, but the words they're using for the sub definitely made it sound like they're trying for a high fantasy type thing, almost.
Sometimes. Other times, they just went, oh, hell.
Yeah, the dub doesn't give you quite that level of it, I'd say. It has the main problem with the dubbing is there's a lot of the dialogue can be kind of occasionally clunky. The exposition is where occasionally you get just really awkward lines. And at the beginning of the first episode is the worst offender for me, where Balsa's staring down at Shinyogo. She's just coming over the mountains from Kanbal, and she says something like, Shinyogo is a peaceful land. And yeah. I'm just like, thank you for providing that information for me, the viewer.
I'm glad you wanted to tell me this.
Yeah.
So from the sounds of it, I would recommend doing this subbed.
I actually, in that regard, I have to disagree. And the reason is, I have watched through the whole thing, but Balsa's voice actress, she's good at the beginning, and she just gets better and better. This woman is one of the better dubbed performances I've heard, and so I would definitely recommend giving a viewing through on dub just for her.
Okay, I guess just give them both a shot then. Just be ready for the dub to be a little clunky at times. The sub was a little clunky at times too, but it was in that sort of fantasy novel sense.
Yeah, it trips a bit.
Yeah. But I guess that brings us to point number 5.
So this is the first one for me since Hero Man where I've wanted to keep watching it for anything out of except for spite, like last week. You laugh, Tom, but seriously, last week I said, you know, I kind of want to see what's going to happen out of spite. But this was legitimately enjoyable. We've watched a few slow shows before, namely Spice and Wolf, and I didn't like that. But this is slow done to my tastes.
Where it simmered to perfection.
Yes. Like, and I guess part of it is that it was the same sort of thing as Spice and Wolf, but the question was, did our main heroine just bleed to death?
Yeah, they're Spice and Wolf didn't have tension.
Rather than, will our heroes make their money back investing in the currency speculation market?
Yeah.
So I would definitely recommend this.
Okay. Tom?
I'll be honest, I adore this show. I really do. My favorite fantasy series in any anime or manga is Berserk. And this Berserk is not anything like this, but I'm almost willing to put it on the same level of quality. The main thing about Morabito is that it's very Japanese fantasy. And this is shown more and more later in the show, so no spoilers, but it's very Japanese folklore-ish. That's the style it goes for. And being a fantasy fan, it's a big breath of fresh air because it's really got a unique element to it. I do recommend this show. The only warning I do offer is that it never reaches the heights of anime glory that I feel certain other shows do. It basically sits at above average and occasionally rises higher than that. But in general, this is a show that it may not stick with you like it did with me, but you won't regret watching it. And that's a pretty good stamp of approval, I say.
Yeah.
Oh, if I might add one thing, it says clearly at the beginning that it's based on either one novel or a series of novels, which explains why the writing is good. Because frankly, the people at Studio Gonzo, I get the impression that they're animators first and writers second.
I actually did do some research on this, and if you do enjoy this show, the first and second novel of the original Japanese novel series are available, I believe, from Scholastic right now. They might be out of print. There was plans to do more, but sales unfortunately fell through, and the series is on indefinite hiatus. But if you did like the first one and wanted to read the original novel, you can find it, and a second. So,
see if I can find the ads on Amazon, and if you like us, buy it through our website.
Yeah.
It was originally children's literature, for the record.
Wow.
I enjoyed this. It was really, really good. It was a breath of fresh air. I'm not sure where I'd rank it on my favorite shows we've watched, but I think I'll be watching more of it in the near future. I definitely recommend it, however you can see it, and whatever form you can get it. Because there are lots of different ways to get it, apparently.
Yep.
If you got Netflix, Crunchyroll.
Yeah. Yeah. And one other thing I found, this seems like it'd be a pretty good show to do a little riff tracks for. Just do a little ribbing on it, because it lends itself to it without being bad. And that's one of the best things I can say for a show.
It has a lot of quiet moments where you could, or I can just picture the three guys at Riff Tracks adding humorous commentary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But not in a way that would ruin anything or wreck any scenes. It, honestly, it's a really, really good show. And it shares a distinction, and I have to note this, of having a busty lead female character who is not used for fan service.
In fact,
thank you, show.
There's, ironically enough, there's a moment in the first episode where she is in fact at some hot springs, and it isn't fan servicey, and not many anime can say that.
Thank you so much, especially since last week.
Yeah.
She's attractive without being pornographic.
It's not even that. It's not even trying to be attractive. It's just she has large breasts. It's
no,
just
I'm saying is that she's beautiful without them trying to throw it in our faces and draw attention to it. It's just a fact.
Yeah. If I may have one final quick comment, I will note, having watched through it several times myself, when you're first going through this show, I recommend paying a lot of attention to the little details. This is a show that will reward you for paying close attention to it. I noticed this in the first episode. There is something that occurs nearly immediately. And when you finish the show, if you remember this moment, you will realize it didn't spoil anything for you, but it gave you a plot point that you would realize later if you remembered it. And it is amazing in hindsight. And it, that makes it worth multiple viewings, in my opinion.
Now, I think we're about done here. This is a great show. You should watch it.
Yep. It's so good to be able to say that for once.
I'm happy I could provide you with something of quality.
Space Wizard Tom, I have one thing to say to you.
Yes?
Have a shotgun blast to the face.
Oh, God!
Oh, great. Now we have to clean up another guest star.
Well, if you keep bringing them, I'll keep killing them.
I'm still alive.
No, you're not!
So come back next week when we start Paint It Black Month with Black Blood Brothers.
Hooray!
Yay, vampires.
Black.
That's worked out so well for us before.
Way.
I think I'm going to miss great shows. Bye, everyone.